This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is Larry Sabato, professor of political science at the University of Virginia. He's also the director of UVA Center for Politics and is the author most recently of The Year of Obama, which is now available in paperback. Larry is also the author of a previous book entitled A More Perfect Constitution, in which he suggests some changes, subtle changes that need to be made to make our nation function better. One of those deals with the Electoral College, and several states right now are going about their own version of changing the Electoral College, passing legislation which would automatically give their state's electoral votes to the winner of the national popular vote. And Larry, thanks very much for being with us as always.
Thank you, Greg. Happy to chat with you about it.
Well, obviously, right now the Electoral College is a winner-take-all in each state, and then the first one to get to 270 currently, or whatever the total of electoral votes is, whoever wins a simple majority, is president of the United States. What do you make of these states going about changing what they can do with their electoral votes?
Well, it's an interesting concept. It's obviously an end run around the Constitution, and it's designed to ensure that no candidate ever wins the popular vote and loses the presidency. This whole movement started after the 2000 presidential election. 10 years later, after Al Gore won the popular vote by about 540,000 votes, but George Bush won the Electoral College by 271 votes, with 270 needed for election, you still have the same activists pushing this plan. They've gotten some states to go along, but if you look at the list of the states, Massachusetts and Illinois and California and Maryland and so on, you'll find that every single one is deeply blue. Every single one is heavily Democratic, and they have far fewer than even 100 electoral votes at this point.
Larry, what's the assumption on the part of the Democrats that this would work necessarily in their favor? I guess if you look back at Bush v. Gore and even a couple of the other instances where the winner of the electoral vote was not the winner of the popular vote, like Benjamin Harrison and Rutherford Hayes, they're all Republicans. But is this a foolproof plan for Democrats?
Absolutely not. In fact, it could easily backfire if there are partisan motives. Now, some of the people involved in this insist that it's not partisan, even though the Democratic states have voted for it. They insist that either party could benefit, and of course that's true. But remember, there are other problems with it. For example, so what happens when a state's vote is nearly tied? What do you do then? What happens in the case of a national vote that is nearly tied? And, you know, at some point in the country's history, we're going to have a national vote that is virtually tied with some disputed votes here and there. Well, how do you determine who won the national popular vote? You're going to have long recounts, court battles. You know, there is no easy way out. There is no easy solution to some of these thorny problems. It's probably better to improve the electoral system, the voting machine. If you're going to work on anything, it's better to do that than to try to come up with a scheme that will cover all eventualities.
So, Larry, what you're suggesting is, while they may have good intentions, the idea of making it based entirely on a national popular vote could have, in 2000, had the popular vote been a little bit closer, basically you had people with magnifying glasses looking at punched and pregnant chads, not just in Florida, but in all 50 states.
It could easily have happened. And I think that, again, you need to think about all the possibilities when you focus on presidential elections, when you think about the Electoral College. It's not a perfect system. There clearly are some problems with it, not least the fact that we have faceless electors, that you can actually have people elected, pledged to one candidate, who just arbitrarily decide for some reason one morning when they wake up they're going to vote for somebody else. That obviously is something that pleases no one, Democrat, Republican, or Independent. So there are some changes that can be made and should be made to the Electoral College. It's not a perfect system.
Larry, as you mentioned, we're nowhere near enough states to get on board this effort to get to a majority of electoral votes. But one of the main reasons the Electoral College was put in place, of course, was to protect the power of the smaller states. We've got at least one in Hawaii who's gotten on board with this. But will that be a major hindrance for some other small states, most of which are red states anyway, to add their voice to this?
Absolutely. I think, in general, the smaller states will resist this unless they happen to have heavily Democratic legislatures. Then you might see them signing on, and Hawaii is a good example. But on the whole, you're not going to have small states essentially being chickens voting for Colonel Sanders.
Larry, I know you talked about this in your book. You also suggested in your book changing the number of members of Congress, which would obviously change the number of electoral votes, since that's how it's based. Tell our listeners real briefly how you think the system could be improved.
I think that the disparity is too great between the electoral representation and the actual popular vote. When the founders first designed the system, the ratio was much smaller. They could not have imagined a system, for example, where California has 70 times the population of Wyoming, and yet both states get two bonus votes in the Electoral College. I think it's in everybody's interest to reduce that ratio. However, unlike some, I don't want to eliminate it. I do want the smaller states individually and cumulatively to have a little extra power in the Electoral College.
And Larry, we kind of glanced by it. You mentioned it in one of your early responses, but you called it an end run around the Constitution. If this movement were to gain a lot of steam, would this have any shot of standing up in federal court?
That's a very good question. And I would love, in an academic sense, to see the Supreme Court grapple with it. I'd be fascinated by their determination. My gut reaction is they might find it constitutional simply because the Constitution doesn't prohibit this. This is a voluntary association of states, and there are provisions of the Constitution, obviously, that encourage voluntary associations and also preserve some of the rights of the states. So they might find it constitutional. I just don't think we'll ever get that far, but it would be fun to see what the Supreme Court had to say.
For political junkies like us, yes, that would be very interesting. Larry, thanks as always for your time. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Greg.
Larry Sabato teaches political science at the University of Virginia. He also directs UVA's Center for Politics. He's also the author, most recently, of The Year of Obama, which is now available in paperback. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.